All right, so I've begun the recording. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order and start with introductions. I'm Alicia Charmett. I'm the co-chair of the advisory group. I am a representative of the Fisheries Advisory Council. And Josh, go ahead.
Josh Kanzler, the other co-chair, representing small utilities, and I work with Southeastern Connecticut Water Authority.
Pat, go ahead, since you were on early.
Pat Carney, Town of Manchester, represent medium-sized municipal utilities,
I
guess. Dan? Good afternoon. Dan Lawrence, I'm Aquarian Water Company, representing the large private water site.
Iris?
Alicia, did you call me?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Iris Kaminsky, New Haven, the Environmental Advisory Council. Sorry, I missed that.
That's okay. Mike Emmons?
Happy holidays, everybody. Mike Emmons, representative of the Connecticut Nursery and Landscape Association.
Karen Bernaska?
Karen Bernaska, Water Projects Coordinator for Save the Sound, and I represent Watershed Land.
Denise Savageau?
Denise Savage, I'm with the Connecticut Association of Conservation Districts.
Virginia.
Virginia De Lima, is anybody else's audio all garbled or is it my computer?
You're the only one I'm hearing that's garbled. I think it might be yours.
Okay.
Jonathan Avery?
Yes, Jonathan Avery. I represent Hazardville and Jewett City Water Companies, which is small privates.
Sean Hayden?
My name is Sean Hayden. I'm the executive director of the Lake Warmock Task Force.
Allie Hibbert?
Allie Hibbert, can I get deep?
Fred Klein?
Fred Klein with Pullman and Comley. I am a member of the Connecticut Power and Energy Society. I'm here on behalf of the energy industry, but I just want to make one clarification. The Connecticut Power and Energy Society is not an advocacy organization, so I am not representing Connecticut Power and Energy Society here. I am a member, and I have experience in both the water and energy industries.
Len?
Hey everyone, Linda Young, former advisory group member, semi-retired, hiding in New Hampshire with Kleinfelder.
Aaron?
Aaron Budris, representing Connecticut Councils of Government.
Yes.
Hi, good afternoon. Jeff Pugliese, Middlesex County Chamber of Commerce, here for the business community.
Corinne?
Hi, Corinne Fitting, Connecticut DEEP.
Martha?
West River Watershed Association in New Haven, also alternate for watersheds.
Lori?
Lori Vitagliano, the Regional Water Authority, sitting in for John Hudak.
Carol?
Carol Haskins, Pomperod River Watershed Coalition, representing water resources.
Brad? All right, Sarah Ridyard?
Sarah Ridyard from Connecticut Water.
Gail?
Hi, Gail Lukina, Pura.
Margaret?
Yep, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Margaret.
Okay, Margaret Minor. I think it's Watersheds or Rivers.
Tom?
Tom Tower, Metropolitan District. I'm the wastewater representative.
And Brenda? Brenda Watson here, Executive Director of Operation Fuel, representing customers. Now, did I miss anyone? The squares move around a little bit as everyone speaks, but I think I got everybody. Did I miss anyone? All right, great. So has everyone had a chance to take a look at the minutes from November? Are there any suggested edits or changes?
Alicia, this is Bruce, and Fred Klein got in touch with me a little while ago and requested a change to something he had said. And it's basically that I had portrayed what he said as a question when he was making a statement about what would be required if the Planning Council to be broader and getting into energy issues. So I will work out the details with him. It's not a major change, but I can work those details out, make the correction, and the group could vote to adopt it as amended.
Okay. Is that all right with everybody? You can give me a thumbs up or a raised hand or in the chat. Okay. Anything else from the minute? Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Seconded.
Okay, Mike Emmons. Seconded by Mike Emmons. All in favor, say aye or give a thumbs up.
Aye.
Any abstentions?
Aye.
I do. I wasn't here.
Pat Carney abstains. Are there any nays? All right. So has everyone had a chance to look at the 2021 schedule? That was sent out along with the minutes, I believe. And I believe that Josh, you had pointed out that, was it the May date was a major Jewish holiday? Did that turn out to be a conflict and did that need to be changed?
I think Bruce already addressed that when on the meeting dates that were sent out for May, which would be the fourth Tuesday in May instead of the third.
Okay. Any other issues with the meeting schedule? And if we don't hear any, I'd like to hear a motion to approve the 2021 meeting schedule.
Hi, this is Brenda. I make a motion.
Thanks, Brenda. Second?
Second.
Virginia seconded. Are there any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, well, then I will assume the rest of you are aye.
I am abstaining.
Okay, Fred,
good. Because I haven't looked at it yet.
Okay, Fred will abstain.
I did just want to say thank you for considering all of the different religious holidays. That was a nice touch.
Okay, so implementation work group update, Virginia.
Okay, the implementation work group met last week. My phone is unstable where it's perched. We had an update of our various, since the order of the agenda, I'll jump to the Alliance for Water Efficiency information. We're moving forward on the rates work group. They are starting to work on the rates models for the Regional Water Authority and the Town of Portland, they're planning to send the invitations to the workshop out in early January. They wanted to get past the holidays just so that things didn't get lost in the shuffle. In terms of the water fixture efficiency revisions, they have a tool that they used, and they had run some scenarios of what kinds of energy savings might be available with using new or water smart fixtures.
And so they've created a draft of that. There were some questions that came up about the assumptions they'd made in terms of the groundwater and surface water split, what percentages were applicable to which. So they're going to make those adjustments to the modeling that they did. Also, they got asked about some of the assumptions that went into this modeling tool, and they decided that they would have a call it an addendum or an appendix to their document that explains some of those assumptions. The summary that we had was several pages long, and we also acknowledged that for politicians in the middle of a legislative session, they really would need to have a one-page summary, and they're going to be working on that as well. Any questions about the work from the Alliance for Water Efficiency before I go on to our work groups? Okay. The drought plan topical subwork group is moving along. They have made writing assignments for various portions of it. They also have a very comprehensive summary of the discussions that they had, which was very impressive. And they're now planning to have their draft report out at the end of January. Some of the things that will be put on hold for future discussion is discussion of the water ordinances, whether they are needed, and if so, in what format. And then also more discussion on needing more data in order to have meaningful regional drought declarations. Now, everybody agrees that it won't be statewide, but some of the data are limited geographically, so it's harder to do it on a more local level. In terms of the domestic water quality testing work group, at our prior meeting, we had said that we thought that all our topical work groups should be making the recommendations that they thought were most appropriate, ignoring known constraints of resources, whether that be time or money. And so with that in mind, they were thinking of recommending an increase in what contaminants are sampled in private domestic wells, and that they would try and tie it to every real estate transaction. Many real estate transactions now require it because the bank or the mortgage holder requires it. But if it's a private sale, that's not required. So they're thinking of recommending that it be with every real estate transaction, in addition to, of course, the new construction. The outreach and educational work group had a very successful presentation to CACIWIC. And CACIWIC was asking them to do follow-up articles for their periodical magazine, and also perhaps planning more workshops in the future. The regionalization and interconnections topical subgroup basically has made no progress because the Water Planning Council has yet to give a go-ahead to work on that. We also spent some time thinking about possible topical, new topical subwork groups. We are recognizing that sometimes there's a lot of lead time to get these work groups started, and so we were talking about that, and I throw that invitation out to this group as well. If there are other topics that you think we should be looking into, please let us know. Clearly, the memo back in, I think it was July of 2018, that ranked the different suggested items from the state water plan would be a core of what we might pursue as new topics. We also felt that we didn't need to be limited to that if there was something else that was important that came up, that we shouldn't find that be a straitjacket. And also, clearly, the work that's going on with the GC3 should be part of our thought process, and that we need to be interfacing with them because they have a lot of momentum. We also had a bit of a discussion on how we are going to track the recommendations that the work groups have been making, and we realize that's something that's been talked about off and on for ever since this group started, how we should be doing the tracking, who should be doing the tracking. And actually that could be a work group in and of itself to design some kind of a tracking tool and set priorities in terms of what the implementation work group would track and what would fall to the responsibility of the agencies under their normal normal processes. I'll mention it because one of the suggestions had come from Lori Matthew, that we focus on high stress basins. A large part of our discussion there was acknowledging that starting in January, DEEP is going to be collecting information on diversions, and that will get us a whole better idea of what basins might actually be stressed. And so it would be wise to have that data before we started really looking into identifying basins that needed the focus of attention. So any questions?
I don't see any raised hands. So does anyone have anything for Virginia before we move on? Hey, Water Utility Coordinating Committee, Dan, do you have an update? Dan Lawrence, if you're talking, you're still on mute. All right, we'll get back to Dan. Maybe he stepped away for a minute. So the Interagency Drought Work Group, oh, there's Dan, go ahead.
Sorry about that, I got a phone call. What's going on, sorry about that.
Work update.
Oh yeah, sorry about that. So we haven't done much since we had our last meeting. The idea is to get a schedule together for 2021 with meetings for all the subcommittee groups and all of that. So that's what we're working on. And I got to work on that. So with Eric and Rish from DPH.
Thanks, Dan. Bruce, do you want to give the Interagency Drought Work Group update?
I can do that. I just have to finish a couple things I'm writing. What I can report is the group met last week, and I believe the press release went out yesterday announcing that a fairly broad rollback of drought stage, so that at this point, New London County was reduced from stage 3 to stage 2, and all other counties either remained at stage 1 or were reduced to stage 1. So we have all but the southeastern county in stage 1. And the group will meet again in January. We will see what the data show at that point. And I shouldn't say we, Martin is OPM's representative, but the group will meet again in January and review the data at that time and see what makes sense at that point. But there is much improvement, as probably surprises no one. However, there are some, you know, getting back to this thing about data, we have relatively limited data of some sort. Some of the groundwater data are very limited. And so we sometimes are left extrapolating across distances or across different kinds of geologic settings. The reservoir data and the groundwater data tend to lag behind everything else, and we didn't want to move too fast too soon. I think that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Bruce. I was in the peanut gallery during the Interagency Drought Work Group, and an interesting thing that they had brought up is that the criteria in the drought plan is good criteria for declaring drought, but it's problematic in recovery you know, as a gauge to how well we're recovering from a drought. So the decision gets a little bit difficult in how, you know, you sort of step back from stages. And Bruce had made a good point during the interagency drought group work group meeting, because they were considering not reducing, I think at one point, and he had said that if things get worse in the spring, you know, how do we communicate this to the public if we're starting at two or stage two or three? And I thought that was a very good point. And particularly because demand right now is much lower than it is in the drier months. But I can see how using the criteria that's in there for drought stages is problematic for recovery. So just a couple of thoughts from that meeting. Any questions?
Along those lines, I recall reading that some areas retain their stage one, even though they probably have recovered. And I was wondering if, Bruce, you could put a little bit more meat on the bones there in terms of what areas actually did recover but are retaining stage one to avoid public confusion, I think was the term that was used for not declaring the drought resolved.
Well, go ahead, Alicia.
I'm sorry. I have to say, well, and this is the difficulty with using the drought criteria, particularly in groundwater and surface water. You know, some of those numbers don't look so good based on that criteria, but there was also a lot of concern about a potential for a two-year drought. So we haven't seen a complete recovery in ground and surf, I don't think there's enough data yet to say that, yes, we have enough recovery on the groundwater side that if we see dry conditions past the spring, if it's going to be enough to keep us out of going into another flash drought. Go ahead, Bruce. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, those were good points. What I was going to say is, I'll use as examples the two counties that have been doing better than everyone else, Fairfield County and Litchfield County. Fairfield County, if we were ignoring reservoir levels, we might have put Fairfield County into normal a couple months ago. They've been getting plenty of rain, and the thing is, reservoir levels are way down. You know, there are issues still there, and so that's an example where one of the factors, reservoir levels, kind of outweighed all the rest. Just keep it at stage one, and that helps maintain consistency in messaging between us and water companies. The other example that got mentioned during the meeting is up in Litchfield County. If you look at the real-time USGS wells, and you can find links to those through the state drought page, you'll see that the well up there has been recovering for months, probably back to early October, yet was still below normal. That's a sand and gravel aquifer well. And the concern is that especially up there in Salisbury, it's routine this time of year for groundwater recovery to stop as ground freezes, precipitation piles up as snow, not infiltrating as rain. And that well was at least, I'd say, a couple feet low heading into the time of year it sometimes stops rising. And so that could be indicative of a broader problem. We don't have enough data points to have a real universal idea of what's going on. So again, when coming out of drought, you don't want to be all that aggressive, and especially in winter, it's not as if, you know, people are going to go back out and start watering lawns or something because of drought stages, or stop watering a lawn because of a drought stage. So those are some examples of where we're kind of finessing it in using our criteria.
Hey, Bruce, this is Dan. Our drought plan actually has a triggers going in as well as triggers coming back out.
right? So we don't come out of drought in Southwest Fairfield County, I believe, until we get over back, I think it's either 75 or 90% in the reservoirs. So assuming that, because if you had a drought in the winter, you'd have a challenge going into the spring. So we have recovery levels as well as going into the drought, so which I think are just as important. So
that's a good point. And I know it was something that was discussed during the drought plan update process, but nothing was ever done with it. And so kind of as before, we're sort of winging it coming out of drought. Although I think some people thought we were kind of winging it going into drought, but especially so coming out.
And DPH still continues to express concern about reservoir levels, not completely across the board, because obviously there are some that are in better shape than others, but they still have concerns about reservoir levels, even outside of Fairfield County. So it seems like we've gotten a lot of rain, but it hasn't been enough compared to how much we haven't gotten since June. So.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is once the leaves are off the trees and everything stops growing is when you get all the water back into your reservoirs. You know, the summer and the fall, things are growing. And so even if it rains a lot, you don't get it all. So our Mystic Reservoir is completely full and spilling. We have some reservoirs in Sanford that are almost spilling now that were very low. Greenwich is climbing. Our bigger reservoir, our barge reservoir, is full almost. So Putnam is almost full. So we're, not moving water right now from one reservoir to another. So we don't want to move water and then have that spill. It's like throwing water away. We want it to spill naturally with that. So I think the rain has helped. A foot of snow won't hurt because the ground is still, the streams are running hard. So that's a good thing right now.
Margaret, you have your hand up?
Yes, I did. I just wanted to point out that for quite a few years, we've been raising the alarm of not having good data on groundwater, and either for private or public water supply. And it's probably our future supply. And we're really, as far as I can tell, not sure how much groundwater, particularly high quality groundwater, we have, other than where water companies have wells and, and report. There's a lot of the state that I think basically our groundwater is not known. We have maps that says groundwater AA, but people haven't been down to look at it for a while in most cases. So that's just a data gap, I think, that is going to become increasingly important.
Definitely. And I believe they addressed that, or they didn't address it, but they pointed that out in the interagency drought work group meeting on a couple of occasions. And I know we've talked about it a lot in the drought working group and the implementation work group on how, some of the recommendations looking at private well data when we don't have access to that data. Anything else? All right, the 2021 member slate, where did we leave off on that, Josh?
I think we just have the one position vacant. John is not here to talk about it. Maybe one of the other members of the nominating committee can discuss it. I don't know if you guys have met in a while to discuss this one vacancy.
I know Aaron, this is Karen. I know Aaron is on also. We have not met, and my understanding is we would have not only Mike's vacancy, but also we're continuing to look at the agricultural seat. But we have not met.
Okay.
We have not.
All right.
I know Mike has been he's put a lot of effort into trying to find a replacement for himself. So.
I did meet with I actually had a good conversation with the executive secretary, Lisa Stevens from CNLA, At this point, there are no candidates for my position. They continue to solicit members and non-members for this position. My alternate, Christian Joseph, has assured CNLA that although he has no intention of filling the chair on a permanent basis, he will fill in as necessary until a permanent replacement is found. So hopefully there won't be any vacancies in that position. Christian is very capable. He works closely at the nursery with DEP. He handles all diversion related matters for the nursery and application. So CNLA will be well represented with him as my alternate.
Thank you, Mike. The report from the Watershed Lands Group. Karen and Margaret.
Hi, this is Karen. I will start off and let Margaret be the closer on this because, first of all, we had a very good meeting last Friday on the 11th. It was recorded. And for anyone's information, the recording, the link to the recording and the notes will be sent out shortly within a few days by Eric Lindquist of OPM. Just a couple highlights. We had a brief update from John Hudak on the Hamden Solar Project and also from Alicia and Denise Savageau on the Rivers Alliance letter to DEEP regarding a solar moratorium. We had very good presentations from Lori Matthew of DPH and also Melanie Bachman of the Connecticut Siting Council. I'm going to throw a few takeaways that I got. I mean, it was a very good meeting, and we look to take this meeting and meet again. We're looking to hold a meeting again in the first 2 weeks of January to kind of finalize a draft of information/report to go to the advisory group. But a couple of things that I thought really stuck out in my mind after that meeting. One was a comment from Lori Matthew that on the need for to develop a statewide plan on the priorities for water resources in the state. Right now, you know, each agency has their own. No one said anything was bad, but the absolute need for a statewide plan. And the policy side. On the permitting side, I think it came very much to light about the complexity of what goes into approving an application, the information from various agencies and entities, the interaction with various levels of government, possibly state, local, and regional. There are a lot of things in play and things that we think we need to look at. There was also a comment made or question that came up, which I thought was very, very important, and that was, what are the cumulative effects of not only these projects, but other projects within a watershed? As the Siting Council has certain projects under its jurisdiction and does look at projects on a project-by-project basis, there was a comment made that I thought was a very good comment on how do we get the total perspective of the cumulative effect on water resources in a particular region. And then from probably an outreach and education standpoint, I think it came to light that there is concern about public involvement and the need to make it easier and more user-friendly. And also, it came from a participant on the need for a consistent message regarding water resources, water planning that goes to local land use boards. So we have a lot of we had a lot of good comments, a lot of good interaction between members and the speakers. I'm going to let Margaret take over, and then we'd like to just spend, if not going over our draft overview, which, by the way, was a draft overview of a report, and we have already gotten comments from the members at that meeting to it, but we would like some input from members of the Water Planning Council, what they would like to see from the Watershed Lands Work Group on a topic, and this is my opinion, that has really blossomed into much more than just what we looked at. We're thinking of from a Watershed Lands Work Group, but a total, that was something that should go not only to the advisory group, but probably to the Water Planning Council. So Margaret, I'm going to turn the floor over to you and let you elaborate or maybe make it clearer what I said. So go ahead.
No, I don't have much to elaborate or make. You were very clear. I could mention that the cumulative effects, the need to understand the cumulative effects of different decisions actually came up, and John Hudak asked it directly, and so did Laurie Matthew, talking about having some kind of more regional approach. And of course, there have been various efforts in the past to look at cumulative effects, even what unit you would look at in the water supply plan. I think it's the sub-regional we agreed was the best, but we didn't get down that far. But it ties in with my concern about the lack of groundwater. We keep approving development in our beautiful Northwest Hills in areas where I know residents have dug 3 wells, 2 of them deep. And I'm just wondering how long we can that we should pay more attention to cumulative effects. One loose end, well, the permitting is extremely complicated and fragmented. And when DEP was merged with energy, the idea at the time was that we would have coordinated goals and maybe a coordinated team that would plan for energy projects, where they should be, where they'd give them maximum environmental benefit, minimize any environmental harm. And we obviously haven't got there. The Melanie Bachman, who gave a very nice presentation and has been very good about getting back. We had some stray questions. Don't quite have the answers yet, but we're getting there. But she mentioned that some projects that are exempt from a strict review and it are the RFPs on a regional basis. And I believe Candlewood Mountain is probably the best known around here of a project that came through that route. I don't know if Peter Hearn is on the phone. I know he understands that pretty well, but I understood Melanie to say that there were still a few more exempt projects in the pipeline. And so my thought is that we should try to be sure that we should request to find out what are those exempt projects and can we make them more protective? And what can we do to be sure these exemptions don't continue in the future? I know the state is working on some regional changes, but I thought the Water Planning Council Advisory Group or the council could look at these exempt projects and try to be sure we don't do it that way anymore. And that's about it. It was a good meeting. Oh, and Alicia was a great host. So that's my 3 cents at the end there.
We have been very lucky, the Watershed Lands Work Group, over our last several meetings, because not only we've had numerous members from the advisory group who sat in on the meetings. Alicia has been involved. Aaron Boudreaux has been on. Fred Klein. I know Dan had been on one of them. Denise Savageau, Pat, I believe. People have from the advisory group have been involved in our Watershed Lands Work Group meetings, and you know I would love their their additional comments. But one of the things that we would like to get today, and I apologize that it didn't get out until today, is that we would like to put forward to Margaret, and I would like to take comments from this group and redo this overall draft outline of a report, draft something so that the Watershed Lands Work Group in the first couple of weeks, hopefully we'll be meeting in the first or second week of January, we'll be able to review it, give us back comments, and we can submit a report, a draft report, back to the members of the advisory group for the January meeting. So one of the things that I'm really looking at today is to get comments for the people who have had this report for at least maybe 2 or 3 days, and also to ask those of you who just received this draft today to put some comments, if you have any comments or questions, in an email and get it to Margaret and me by Friday so we can incorporate everything and come up with another draft. And I'm going to ask Alicia and Josh, if that sounds all right with the schedule for you, then we'll try to move forward with it.
I'm fine with it.
Well, I guess I just, are there any members of the group that have an issue with that timeline?
I, for one, will make every effort to try and get some comments back from folks in the solar industry. I do have a question, Margaret. I was a little confused as to what you said about exempt projects. And
yes, well, you recall Melody explaining that there's a class of regional RFPs that yes. are exempt, not entirely, but from the section of their oversight law that she was showing us. And I know Peter Hearn has cataloged that very well. And also, I think Katie Dykes has talked about it. Should we even continue doing these? But I don't have my notes in front of me. Are Melanie's PowerPoint, the section she was talking about, but the standout project of this type in Connecticut, I believe, is the Candlewood Mountain project.
So, Fred, these are the projects that are exempt from the provisions of PA 17218, because they were already in the pipeline when that was enacted. So there were certain projects that were in the pipeline before a certain date that are exempted from the provisions of PA 17218.
Thank you, Alicia.
But they're not exempt from siting council jurisdiction.
No, just provisions of that act.
Yeah. Okay, getting a deep permit.
Thank you, Alicia, for clarifying that. I was trying to remember what part of the law they were exempt from. And it's a part of the law that really, to my mind, provides minimal standards of oversight, a great improvement on what we had before. But to have something come through exempt, I think we really should try to do everything we can to not permit more of those projects, even if they're in the pipeline, would be my wish, but certainly not to have, well, I guess we can't have more because they all would have started. New ones could not be made exempt, am I right? Because the law would be in effect when they were started. But I don't like the idea of even two or three or four more of these coming into the state without some special oversight. So that's my concern.
Alicia, if just for clarification, could you remind the group what PA 17218 does and what the exemption accomplishes?
So if I remember everything correctly, because I would have to look it back up again, for projects over 2 megawatts, the DEP, during the siting council process, there's a requirement that DEP and the Department of Agriculture do a review and I believe give their blessing on any projects that impact core forests and agricultural lands. But please, someone correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm mischaracterizing it, but I'm doing this from memory.
Not just agricultural lands, it actually says prime farmland.
Prime farmland, yeah.
Alicia, on the question of give blessing, I guess we should check that. I'm not sure. I know they can comment, and the comments, quite often, the language is you have to take them into consideration, which is a little vague. But I can't remember, and I don't know if anyone on the phone can remember, is there an actual approval? Or do Ag and Deep simply provide comments?
I'll have to look it up, Margaret. I can't remember specifically.
Yeah,
Denise, do you remember?
No, I don't think they have to approve. I think they have to comment on it, but I would have to look at it again.
Yeah, that's my recollection, but it's my recollection is obviously a little weak.
Yeah.
This is Karen. My understanding, and I don't have Melanie's slide presentation in front of me, is that they have to DEEP and or ag has to provide letters of confirmation or something like that. It was. I thought there was, and I'm trying to look through some notes right now myself, and I will. But that I thought it was a little stronger than just comments.
I hope so. That would be great.
I think we need to make clear that it does not exempt the projects from siting council approval or the need to get a deep permit, and so it doesn't really affect the siting council jurisdiction per se in terms of their review and passing upon and their ability to accept, reject, or modify a proposal, and also the deep general permit requirements.
So that's one of the questions we had for Melanie is how many permits are required when applications come to you? You know, do you know? She, I think, wasn't clear about this because I actually, you know, heard a very good siting council member asking during a meeting a couple of weeks ago on a big solar project, where are we in the sequencing? He was trying to figure out what had been done and what remained to be done. And the question of permits, is it a general permit? If so, what kind of general permit? Because they have different strengths and weaknesses. And I'm not quite, well, I think I know, but there's a lot of emphasis on the stormwater management permit and the general permit, which I'm not quite sure why we give it so much emphasis. But in most cases, we that are at all challenging, we like to see an individual permit, not a general permit.
Yeah, I shared with the group, and hopefully people have received it, the new deep Appendix I addressing stormwater runoff for solar projects. And it's quite quite detailed. So I recommend that people take a look at that and see, you know, what the deep requirements are in addition to what the siting council looks at. Karen, are we going to get a copy of Melanie's presentation?
Yeah. Two things I want to, yes. One, Eric Lindquist sends out notes. And once again, they are my notes, and just I'm going to add this right now because I'm reading them, that this is regarding the topic we were just speaking about, the PA 17218. And what my notes from Melanie are for projects. The Siting Council needs confirmation from AG, from Ag or Deep, that the projects will not materially affect the status of the land.
I just put that section from the act in the chat. So if anybody wants to take a look at it, grab copy and paste. And that's exactly what Karen said. Not material effect is the language that's in the public act. And also, Fred, does a red line exist for the permit compared to the draft permit? The stormwater permit.
I'm not sure.
Okay. I'll check and see if one, it would just be really helpful to see a red line version of what exists now compared to what was in the draft permit, particularly those of us who commented on it. So.
And to answer you, Fred, is when Eric Lindquist does send out, and they are my notes with the link to the recording, he will also attach Melanie's presentation.
Great. Thank you.
No. Well, we thank everyone. And I hope we're not getting too much into the weeds for people who were not at this meeting. I but would just ask you all to, you know, look at the draft, knowing that it was a draft that we have already, when speaking with Margaret and I speaking with one another after the meeting, we've added a few things, changed a few, but we would very much like your comments so we can put something else together for this next work group meeting. And just know that all of you are welcome to attend the next time we meet.
And Karen and Margaret, can you just put your email addresses in the chat just in case there's anybody here that doesn't have it?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
I just have to say materially effect could be strict or it could be a barred door. It's really hard to tell from that language. I will put my email in the chat.
Thank you, Margaret.
So I just wanted to make a couple of comments on the meeting about something that really struck me that's, you know, at a bigger context. And that had to do with a couple of discussions we've been having. And I think Lori brought up a couple of the issues. And one was talking about watershed lands. And there seemed to be confusion when we're talking about either utility class one, class two lands, or this bigger concept of protecting lands within a public drinking water supply watershed, whether they be utility lands or non-utility lands. And I think that that's something we need to make sure that we're talking about. And certainly the watershed lands group has always, for the most part, had been looking at, you know, protecting the lands in terms of open space and making and trying to get easements on them. But now we're talking about it in this bigger context of just watershed management. So I wanted to bring that out there. And one of the topics that really hasn't been tackled either by the State Water Plan Implementation Team and or the Water Planning Council Advisory Group really is this issue of water quality and source water protection, which is our public drinking water supply. And I think that was one of the things Lori kind of was relating to, looking at the cumulative effects of, you know, looking at water, you know, these watersheds, these public drinking water supply watersheds. So the reason I'm bringing it up here is Karen and Margaret are working on a great report. And, you know, but it's very focused on a particular land use. But I'm bringing up, do we need to talk about source water protection? It's coming up again in multiple groups, but it's, at this point, we don't have any work group either in the state water plan or in the Water Planning Council Advisory Group looking at this whole concept of source water protection. And similarly, it's being brought up in the Governor's Council for Climate Change. So I'm putting it out there, and maybe, you know, the chairs, co-chairs of the Water Planning Council Advisory Group and then working with Virginia with the State Water Plan can figure out which part of our group should really be tackling this. It's more than just the watershed lands. It's about dealing with non-point source pollution and a whole other lot of other things. And we really haven't been focused on it. And it's becoming a bigger and bigger and bigger issue with emerging challenges to our watersheds, emerging issues like the harmful algal blooms and the PFAS and a whole host of other things. It's like, how do we deal with these? So I'm bringing it up because we've been kind of dancing around it in this topic, but very specifically related to the solar installations. But it's definitely this whole concept of source water protection is bigger, and we need to start. You know, I think it makes sense that those of us working, you know, with the water on the Water Planning Council Advisor Group or the State Water Plan start looking at this and bring it up as a topic because it's not going away. And I think the assumption was it's all being done. There's a lot of people working on non-point source pollution watershed management, but that's kind of the rub, is that a lot of that has been focused on impaired watersheds and not public drinking water supply watersheds. And there's this misunderstanding. Oh, my husband's banging. Sorry about that. He's outside doing something, preparing for the storm. Who knows? Looking at, you know, the idea of source water protection, not just watershed management, not looking at impaired water. So how do we talk about that? And one of the things that I've seen is people don't understand when we're talking about source water protection, outside of a handful of people, people do not understand what we're talking about. And I thought that that was somewhat evident. And this is not a reflection, a bad reflection on someone like Melanie or whatever. But when people don't understand when we're talking about protecting public drinking water supply watersheds, and they only understand aquifer protection areas or whatever, because, you know, it's something that we're seeing across the agencies. And several weeks ago, we actually did training for DEEP staff, NRCS, which is Natural Resource Conservation Service staff, so that everybody understood those, the concept and the terms we're talking about when we're talking about source water protection and protecting public drinking water supply watersheds, and people don't know that terminology. So that's why I'm bringing it up, because we have a whole lot of people working on a whole lot of things with resource management and water management, and they don't know the terminology specific to drinking water supplies. And I think that it would be our responsibility to bring that up and to have some folks working on that issue.
Denise, can you, would you be willing to put a proposal in writing together of what a work group like that would look like for the advisory group?
Yeah, I can do that, because like I said, I'm just seeing it missing, and I didn't mean to go on for so long. I lost my train of thought when my husband started hammering, but I can do that for you.
Thank you. Okay, anything more for Karen and Margaret? And Karen and Margaret, anything more from you? Do we want to give Lori a chance if she has anything to bring up on the Gaylord Solar Project, since we've talked about it a few times here? Did you have anything, Lori?
I actually do not have anything to add. Thank you for mentioning. As you know, I'm sitting in for John again today, since he's busy with that project or that hearing, so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just wanted to check. And Karen, are you?
No, I think we're pretty well set, unless somebody has any, you know, questions for us, and that we look forward to receiving, you know, comments and input by Friday.
Okay. Virginia seems to be taken over by a feline there. Anything else before we move on to something a little lighter, but still sad? This is Mike Emmons' last meeting with us, and I would like to personally thank Mike. It's so wonderful to have folks come in. We all have different perspectives, and for it's great to have people come in to share their perspective and to be willing to put the work in, take all the work we're doing into consideration and give their feedback. And Mike's always been really great about that. And he's a very nice man in general too. So he's been so nice to have around. And so you will be missed, Mike, and hopefully they can find a worthy replacement for you. But we just want to thank you for your work. And Josh, do you want to add anything?
No, I just want to echo what you said. Thanks, Mike, for all your work. I know you weren't on the advisory group that long, but you certainly did your lion's share while you were on the group, so it's much appreciated.
Thank you, Josh. Well, it's been my pleasure. It's been great working with all of you. And yes, it hasn't been nearly as long as many of you. I think the biggest thing that struck me was how passionate you all are about what you're doing. Coming from an industry that that probably may at first not sound very compatible with what you all are doing, it was quite a learning curve for me at first, but I really enjoyed all the important things that needed to happen for you guys to make all the water plan work. And it's something that I will appreciate being a part of, and I wanted to thank all of you for for allowing me to be on that and being patient. I didn't quite understand where all the importance of some of the projects were. I come from a different industry, but I certainly understand how important it was that you had these discussions. So again, thanks to all of you, and I will miss you all.
Does anybody have anything else? Any other sentiments for Mike? Yes, thank you. And Mike has sent along sort of an after action report for us all to take a look at. And we'll certainly, and I told Mike that a former boss of mine used to buzz us every time someone used an acronym. And I think I might have to start that here with this group to make sure we're all using language that everyone understands. Warning.
Well, that terminology certainly was something I had to get used to, the acronyms and abbreviations, and you're thumbing through the papers to find out what it means, and trying to get up to speed. It was a learning curve, but it's all good.
Yeah. So we might have the some sort of buzzer from now on. Every time someone uses an acronym, I'll make you explain it. Well, thanks again, Mike. Does anybody else have anything to say? All right, great. Thanks, everybody. And thanks again, Mike.
Thank you, Alicia.
Is there any other business before we move on to public comments? All right. Are there any public comments?
Yes, hi.
Go ahead, Irene.
So I actually want to comment on or support what Denise said about water source protection. And what I am interested in, and I've been following these meetings for a long time, and I really appreciate the professional and the passion of the people here, but I'm really interested in water pollution prevention. And it's very, the umbrella is very, very big, because last time I asked about the microfibers, and we have problems with PFAS, that there's a whole separate committee that is dealing with that. In New Haven, I joined the reason I joined the Environmental Advisory Council in the beginning a few years ago is because of the pesticide use. And all of these are actually now, even there, they start from one source, they end up being like non-point pollutants. So I would like to see that Connecticut would have some kind of declaration to make a commitment to reduce using known pollutants. And I don't know how you would start, because there's a lot of subcommittees, and everyone deals with one thing, and they're different. Sometimes there's just one legislation for one type of pesticides when there are many. So, and I think it's one of the more cost-effective ways to deal with water source pollution, water source protection. So, I don't, so that is my comment, that it will be some kind of commitment from the state to deal with it, and I don't know what umbrella committee you would have for that, because everything is connected and overlapping.
This is Mike Emmons. I might as well put my opinion in, because I think it's important what she said, and it makes a lot of sense. And for me to say that, I have to go back to when, for a short period of time in the early 80s, I worked on Long Island. And back then, Long Island was a big agricultural area on the East Coast. And a new insecticide had come out that was going to revolutionize the potato growers out there. And many of you probably already know it. And it allowed the potato growers to apply a product called Temic in the ground that would control insects. Less spraying, they thought it would be less money and less product to use and be environmentally more conscious. The problem was that Temic was remarkably stable to a point where
would maintain its potency as it worked its way into the aquifer. And the bottom line is, from the middle 80s, and I'm not sure where they are now, but many wells were poisoned because of this product that wasn't either thought out well or all intentions being good. It poisoned a lot of the wells to a point where people either couldn't use the wells or they had to go through expensive process to filter out the water. So I think when it comes to pesticides, there certainly needs to be a make sure that they're being, first of all, being applied correctly, and that they're being used in a way where it's not damaging the environment. I used, it was around a lot of chemicals when I worked at in the nursery industry. And I know that if you don't use them properly or don't read the label or don't understand it, a lot of people think more is better, and sometimes less is better. But it was a good comment, and I needed to tell that story because the ramifications of using Temic on Long Island many years ago are still being felt today. There, I'm done. I'm leaving.
Hi, this is Brenda. Just wanted to ask, would that require legislative action to address the use of Roundup and other chemicals like that?
There have been quite a few legislative proposals to sort of get a better handle on pesticide use here in Connecticut, and particularly some more specific chemicals. And I'm sorry, I'm blanking on some of the ones that have come up in the last few sessions. I apologize. But most chemicals, DEP has a permitting process for pesticide application for commercial sprayers and for some specific chemicals. CEQ actually wrote a pretty good report a few years ago on some of the issues with enforcement of those permits. And it's also been brought forward many times that while there are permits for specific chemicals and specific users of the chemicals commercially, you can pretty much use from a couple of different companies in a matter of 24 hours on your own property several different applications, which could also be very problematic when it's done all at once. So there certainly are a lot of issues with pesticide applications that folks have been trying to get at for pretty much every legislative session, in my recent memory, at least. Does that answer your question, Bart?
Yes, thank Brenda? You. Yeah, thank you for that. Something to think about and consider as, we start to look at what our legislative agenda will be and the impact that those chemicals have on health and safety. I would like to see an elimination of all chemicals for farming, but I know that's a big task at hand. But thank you for that.
I'm looking for the report here to, I don't think I'm going to find it fast enough to put in the chat, and I don't want to, anyway, here's a list of special reports. I'll keep it there. It should be under here. I'll put that in the chat.
Is there a way to have access to that? I'm called in.
Oh, that's right. I'll email it to you, Brenda.
All right, thanks.
Anything else? Okay, our next meeting will be January 19th at 1:30. The Water Planning Council will be meeting on January 5th at 1:30. And the implementation work group will be meeting January 12th at 1:30. So with that, does anyone have a motion to adjourn to put out there?
Happy holidays to everyone.
Yeah.
Stay safe.
You too, and everyone else.
Happy holidays.
That's apparently a motion to adjourn. Thank you.
That's a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Exactly.
Happy holidays.
I second the happy holidays.
Well, it was. It's hard to believe that we're going to see each other again in 2021. My mind is still blown by that, but I hope you all have a wonderful holidays and a very happy and safe new year. Please stay safe. Yeah.
Especially tomorrow.
Yep. Happy holidays.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Take care, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.